and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Alexis Christophorus. A day after Idalia delivered a blow to Florida's west coast as a Category 3 hurricane and barreled up the coast of the Carolinas, President Biden made a visit to FEMA headquarters in D.C., thanking staffers for efforts during the hurricane and wildfires in Maui.
It's amazing the sacrifices, and I might add, risks your folks are taking out in the field.
The president says he'll travel to Florida Saturday to see some of the hurricane damage. Former President Trump waived his right to appear at his arraignment next week in the Georgia racketeering case to overturn the state's 2020 election. He entered a plea of not guilty. Attorneys have also filed motions to sever Trump's trial from several co-defendants who are demanding a speedy trial. Concerns over the health of Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. For the second time in a month, McConnell appeared to freeze up while trying to answer questions by reporters. McConnell's staff says the 81-year-old felt lightheaded. This is ABC News. The FDA has sent warning letters to three baby formula companies, citing contamination concerns. Investigators found significant violations in the ByHeart, Mead Johnson, and Perrigo facilities during inspections dating back to last year. New Supreme Court financial disclosure reports are in, with new information on Justice Clarence Thomas's affiliation with a Republican donor.
Newly released financial disclosure documents show Justice Clarence Thomas accepted five private jet flights from friend and GOP megadonor Harlan Crow last year. Thomas also says he was a guest at Crow's New York estate. Scandals swirling around Justice Thomas's prior financial disclosure compliance triggered critical examination of the Supreme Court's ethics practices. In the new report, Thomas vows that going forward, all trips provided by Harlan Crow and other friends will be reported. Brittany Shepard, ABC News, Washington.
Drought in Canada and bad weather in Europe combining to cause a rise in wheat prices. Alexis Christophorus, ABC News.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. According to a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel report, Wisconsin taxpayers could be on the hook for up to $2 million for outside attorneys hired by Republican legislative leaders to defend the Republican-drawn election maps. A spokeswoman for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss did not respond to a request for comment, and Senate Minority Leader Melissa Agard said the GOP will pay any price to retain their unfettered power and usurp the will of the majority. United States Senator Tammy Baldwin wants Wisconsin designated as a tech hub, which would bring money into the state that could lead to more jobs and local industry. The designation comes with up to $75 million to help develop future technologies in the United States, and at least 20 tech hubs will be chosen across the country. 15 public and private partners, led by WEDC, have come together to lead the tech hub effort in Wisconsin. The state's bid focuses on biohealth and personalized medicine. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Hey, this is Joey Erickson at Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me at joey.erickson@civicmedia.us.
Experience the magic. Joy Engine presents Nightlight, Friday and Saturday, September 8th and 9th, from 5 until 10:30 p.m. The dazzling live spectacle brings 4D projection mapping technology to Milwaukee's iconic historic Mitchell neighborhood. A multi-story building at 710 West Historic Mitchell Street will serve as the mesmerizing backdrop for the show. Nightlight will feature a fashion show, a variety of local vendors, dance performances, and music. After sundown, the event will set the grounds alight with an amazing motion graphic show. Families with children will have plenty of options to indulge in memory-making activities throughout the festival's run, including a life-size light bright wall and a hands-on multilingual exhibit presented by PNC Bank. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event, Nightlight, presented by Joy Engine, where art comes to life. Log on joyengine.org. That's joyengine.org.
Hey, this is Joey Erickson at Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me at joey.erickson@civicmedia.us.
Have you Googled yourself lately? Are there negative posts from an ex-employee or from a former client? Maybe an outdated news article or sensitive personal information about your family? Search engines don't always get it right. But right or wrong, it's your reputation on the line. That's where Reputation Defender by Norton comes in. one of the most trusted names in online reputation repair. Reputation Defender has been fixing people's search results for over 15 years.
In fact, the entire hour is going to be Paul Nyland from Lifeline Ukraine. He was kind enough to join us today, and we talked about noon our time, 8 o'clock his time, as they are a third of the way around the world. And frankly, this is going to be the probably the best update you're going to get on what's exactly going on in Ukraine. They just don't even really cover it here in the United States that much anymore, so we got it for you. It's a pretty much an entire hour. We're going to take a break. Start off with Paul Nyland. When we do come back, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950, here to tell you about the exterior construction company I trust, Snap Construction. If your home was hit with the most recent storms, trust the most well-reviewed exterior construction company, Snap Construction, for a free home inspection.
This is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. There are a lot of great construction companies in town. My advice is to take your time and do your research. Make sure they are locally owned and that they guarantee their craftsmanship for life. Also, you want to find a company that's been in business for at least 10 years. You want to work with a company that's going to be there long after the work is done. Snap Construction has handled thousands of claims, and we'll help you through the process.
Don't go with the out-of-town, fly-by-night contractor. Most storm damage goes missed by the untrained eye. Trust Snap Construction for your free storm damage evaluation. For your free storm damage evaluation, call Snap Construction at 612-333-SNAP or visit them online at snapconstruction.com. That's 612-333-SNAP or snapconstruction.com.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. You've heard me talk about the Rudy Luther Toyota We Buy program. Now hear from someone who's actually done it, me. Our kid's car, the 2006 Toyota Sienna, served us well for 17 years, but it was finally time to say goodbye. The We Buy program is really simple. I gave them some basic information, we set up an appointment, and after a quick verification, they gave me an estimate and a check, and they made me a generous offer. It was that fast. See for yourself. Try the Rudy Luther Toyota We Buy program at RudyLutherToyota.com.
Warner Stallion delivers appliance savings on a stick you won't find anywhere else. Earn a bonus for each additional appliance you buy for up to $1,000 back. Plus, pay no interest for 2 years. Shop smart with the specialists at Warner Stallion.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. It's my absolute privilege to welcome back to the show Paul Nyland, who is the founder of Lifeline Ukraine, a great organization in Ukraine offering mental health services and suicide prevention for Ukrainian service members, their families, and basically anyone else that needs it. And as we've talked before about Lifeline Ukraine and Ukraine as well, it is a high-demand service right now as the Ukrainians are dealing with the horrific aggressions of the Russian dictator Putin. But as if you've been paying attention here, Ukraine is putting on a master's class of how you take down what is supposedly on paper a better force. They are absolutely kicking the Russians' caboose at this point, and I think the writing is on the wall. But needless to say, the strain is still there until the Russians are out of Ukraine, and that includes Crimea. Paul's kind enough to join us today to talk in depth about what is going on in Ukraine right now. Paul, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Matt, I really enjoyed our conversation last time, and I'm grateful to you for inviting me back to come and chat with you again.
It is all my pleasure, and all my best to everyone over there. I can tell you this about Minneapolis, St. Paul. I don't see Russian flags. I see Ukrainian flags everywhere. They paint the buildings in the downtown, the Ukrainian flag colors. There's a tremendous amount of support, as there should be, because as we remind people, this is Russia just basically trying to steal part of Ukraine away, and Ukraine said enough's enough, and frankly, it has not gone the way the Russians thought it was going to. In the last few months, it's been remarkable how well the Ukrainian forces have done, because they have been able to make some inroads into these areas, and as a matter of fact, it's becoming very clear that the Russians are in big trouble in these occupied territories.
So the current situation is, as you described, that the Ukrainians are making inroads into the occupied territories. But if you go back 18 months, it wasn't really Russia's intention then to take a part of Ukraine, as you've just said in your question. Russia wanted to take all of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. They came for Kiev. They had a plan to to end Ukraine's democracy, to terminate the presidency of Zelensky and the legitimate government of Ukraine, and replace them with a Russian hand-picked puppet, right? And that's the essence of what this was about then, was about a battle between democracy and either autocracy or kleptocracy, whichever phrase you prefer. And, you know, then with the early Ukrainian military successes of driving the Russians out of the Kiev region and the north of the country, putting them back across the border into Belarus, where they'd come from, and then the further phases of the counter-offensives that kicked them out of the Kharkiv region and then took, and I remember that we talked about this last time as well, and talked about how vastly different those two military operations were, the Kharkiv offensive and the Kherson operation. Mm-hmm. Kharkiv was lightning and Kherson was softly, just patiently continue to deny them their logistics and their resupply opportunities until it became untenable for them to stay in the city of Kherson. And then we saw the wonderful scenes of the people of Kherson being liberated and welcoming back the Ukrainian army there. But you know what's going on now again is remarkable. It is a display of military ingenuity. And I mean the many different facets of this phase of the war and what is going on with, you know, the naval drones hitting targets in the Black Sea with the, you know, UAVs that are hitting targets inside of Russia, which is really, really important for you know, damaging Russia's ability. Like this massive drone strike on the Pskov airport a few days ago took out a bunch of IL-26 military cargo planes, yeah, right? And that's what's being used to transport large amounts of men and equipment from remote regions of Russia or from wherever they're being produced towards the front lines. And a big part of that capacity just got taken out. So it's all these different aspects of what is going on with Ukraine's counteroffensive. But what the guys on the ground are doing, you know, if you were to look at the map on CNN International, I'm not sure what they show there on CNN domestically, but you see lots and lots of yellow spots, and they're all along the front line. Ukraine is attacking everywhere on the front line and has been doing so to probe for weaknesses. And in some places, they've found them now, and they're exploiting them to some incredible success.
I mean, obviously, one of the things that the Russians did is they dug trenches, they planted a lot of mines. There are some people that I think that didn't understand that were kind of wondering, why is this taking a while? And I thought the Ukrainian military, considering what they had to clear out of the way first, were doing a remarkable job. They are making these inroads, and I was reading a little bit about the fact that it's not going to take too much longer or further into these occupied territories where Ukraine's going to become have a massive advantage, where they're going to be able to hit basically all the roads that supply the Russian forces. And so it really is going to change the dynamic of this. And really, as one person I read was reading about, he's saying that's the beginning of the end of this for the Russians. If they can't supply their own troops via the road and can only do it via the sea, they're in big trouble.
And that is why the recent capture, it was liberated about 10 days ago. There's a small settlement called Robotyny in the south of Ukraine, and the Ukrainians got to that point. But what that meant was not just that there's a small settlement of a few hundred people that have now fortunately been liberated. What that meant was that the Ukrainians had passed the minefields and we're at the point of those first Russian dug-in lines of defense, whether they're the trenches or whether they're the dragon's teeth or whatever else they're coming up against. But, I mean, you talk about the intensity of the mining. I read a news article yesterday that talked about a group of sappers who spent 18 hours crawling on their stomachs through a minefield that had six landmines for every square meter of territory, right? And I mean, it's an 18-hour shift in any situation is a pretty intense thing to have to do. But to be doing that, where you are constantly at risk of, with, you know, the wrong placement of a hand or a foot, of potentially losing that limb, and you know, knowing what the importance of that is, because you're clearing a path through for other forces to be able, infantry forces and guys who are going to start moving rapidly once they're at it face to face with the Russians, you know, that's the kind of thing that's been going on. But getting to Robertini means that the first lines of defenses have been breached, and the Ukrainians are very much exploiting that now. And from what I'm reading, what is between the first and the second lines is not so heavily mined, and is less well manned. And in actual fact, throughout the front lines, the Russians are they're low on manpower, mm-hmm. certainly low on trained manpower. Right? I mean, and it's insane that Putin thinks that another wave of mobilization, getting another 450,000 troops, is going to make the difference. You know, getting bodies is one thing. Having trained professional soldiers is quite another. Mm-hmm. And so the mobilized forces that have been holding some of these lines, yes, they're dangerous, right? They're men with automatic weapons. Anybody with an automatic weapon poses a threat to the lives of my friends, right? Mm-hmm. But these aren't professional soldiers. And there are some professional soldiers in there, but as a whole, when you've got this mix of maybe some paratroopers, some experienced military, and then a bunch of mobics, as we call the mobilized, to simply make up the numbers and absorb Ukrainian ammunition, the overall fighting capacity of that particular unit is vastly diluted because mm-hmm. of the fact that they're not full of professional military who know what they're doing. But the other important thing about Robertino is that that then gives Ukrainians sight to a city called or a town called Tokmak. And from Tokmak then, as you've just said, everything, all the ground lines of communication, all of the supply routes, the roads, the rails that are in the south that were taken because Putin wanted this land bridge to connect Russia itself to occupied Crimea, all of that from Tokmak is now under fire control of the Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians are advancing in that direction with certain success and with relative speed right now.
And we should also mention a lot of those Russians that they're putting out there don't even have a weapon. They're not giving them weapons. They're not giving them ammunition. I don't know what they're thinking they're going to do outside of, as you said, absorb Ukrainian bullets. But, you know, the Russians clearly don't even care about their own troops. That should tell you everything there. There was a time in the American Civil War when the ironclad ships came out. And at one point, the two most powerful navies in the world were the North and the South. They literally had the most, you know, up-to-date, Navy, you know, containments at that point. There is a similar thing that's going on that Ukraine has taken over, and I have never seen a mastery of drones as you guys are doing right now. Your strikes deep into Russia, hitting military targets, the stuff that you're doing out in the Black Sea, it's a master's class at what you can do when you have people that understand how the drone operates and how is it most lethal in a combat situation. It is truly incredible, your drone corps. That is, it's got to be the best in the planet right now.
There's lots of things to say about that. One thing is that Ukrainians are particularly ingenious in general. Yeah. They're very, very smart people. They're very inventive. They're, you know, I mean, like there's some big tech unicorns that have been born in Ukraine. There are some huge IT companies that are you know, Ukrainian founded, and it's an extension of that, and an understanding as well. Sadly, that you know, there was no way of achieving air superiority at this phase in the war by expecting modern Western fighter jets to be delivered. We got that message a long time ago. Fortunately, it's now changed, but The only way to achieve air superiority, therefore, was through drone power. And I wrote an article maybe 4 months ago, looking at how the counteroffensive was going to begin. And one of the things that I said there is the first thing that you will see is you're going to see a massive wave of drones attacking the Russian positions inside of Ukraine. What I did not predict, and what has been stunning in recent days, recent weeks in actual fact, or months in fact, this has been going on for, is the attacks inside Russia itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, there was an attack yesterday with a drone. I think it was in the city of Bryansk, and the target that it hit was a microelectronics factory that is producing. And Ukraine had actually, they telegraphed this days in advance. They'd said, we know where your drone production facilities are, and we're going to come for them. And then 2 days later, one of the factories that's producing circuit boards that are being used for the Russian drone production was hit and taken out, right? But, you know, I mean, symbolic strikes in the heart of Moscow, in some of these high-rise parts of Moscow, very, very targeted strikes as well. Russia will throw cruise missiles. Monday night, Tuesday morning, they threw 28 cruise missiles at Kiev. All 28 were shot down. But they were all heading for civilian targets. Yeah. Russia doesn't care about civilian casualties. They want to maximize civilian casualties. When Ukraine has hit business centers in Moscow, it's specifically flying those drones right into premises that are being operated by certain ministries of the Russian government. Like, it's that pinpoint. And I mean, we mentioned the attack on Peskov the other day, earlier on in the conversation as well. Peskov is 700 kilometers away from Ukraine's borders. That's some long range capability to be able to do that. And I, again, in my article 4 months ago, I was predicting the mass use of drones on the front, which we're also seeing as well. But I couldn't have predicted these strikes into Russia itself. And what it demonstrates so starkly is that Russia is completely incapable of defending its own territory, of defending its own country. And for us, sitting here in Ukraine, when we're seeing these strikes, it's a source of glee, is what it is.
Well, and it's as you said, you're restrained. You're hitting specific targets that have military or technological applications. It's disgusting to watch the Russians try to launch missiles into schools, theaters, parks, crowded shopping areas. That's not a sign of a failing war. I don't know what it is. And there's nothing there. They're a drunk man in a bar throwing haymakers in a dark room, and they don't really seem to have any game plan.
These awful barbaric strikes causing mass casualties on civilian targets, they've been going on since the early days of this phase of the war. That is what they do. And they do it very deliberately. There was recently, about maybe 5 weeks ago, there was a pizza restaurant in a city not far from the front lines called Kramatorsk. And the restaurant was known. It was one of the only places that remained open because, I mean, it is not far away at all from the front lines, potentially within artillery range even. But this pizza place remained open, and it was popular with journalists particularly, and the Russians slammed a massive missile into it and killed, I think the final death toll there was 34 people, you know, including a pair of young girls. They were twins. They were 14 years old, right? Mm-hmm. There was a very famous Ukrainian writer who'd been working on documenting war crimes, and she was there with a team of journalists from Colombia. We saw this time last year, there was a strike on a train station, and that's deliberately targeting women and children who are evacuating. And again, it was an absolute bloodbath, and And that's what the Russians do. That is what their war fighting style is about. For Ukraine, you know, as much as there is a deserved animosity between the people of Ukraine and the people of Russia who fail to condemn what their state is doing, Ukraine will still not waste a weapon taking out those either supportive or ambivalent Russian citizens, because Ukraine is not interested in that kind of thing, and every single one of our missiles is better spent on hitting an actual military target and something that's going to make a difference in this war. What Russia thinks makes a difference in this war is terrorizing the people of Ukraine. Well, they've learned, well, maybe they haven't learned, but we have shown in the last 18 months that we will not be terrorized, and we will go about defeating this evil that is attempting to subsume, destroy our country, and genocide the people of the country.
I will, one final note here about the military combat, which once again, Ukraine is absolutely doing a magnificent job at this point, a master's class on how you repel a force. I was very interested to see that the Marine landing that you guys had down, I believe it was on the Crimean Peninsula, completely caught the Russians off guard. We're not expecting it. And it kind of makes it seem like there's absolutely zero in the way of defense down there, which kind of, I think, you know, kind of opens up, the potential of a new front there. Because once again, if Russia has to start all of a sudden defending places they haven't even built up to defend, they're in big trouble.
Well, I mean, they can't defend the mainland of Russia, right? Yeah. It was months ago that Russian volunteers who were fighting on the side of Ukraine decided that they would cross into Russia proper. They would cross the actual recognized legitimate Russian-Ukrainian border and say, we're coming. And they were almost unchallenged, as was Prigozhin when he took over the military base in Rostov-on-Don, unchallenged again, and then decided to go from there on a joyride towards Moscow before he aborted that because he did a deal with Putin, and then Putin reneged on the deal and blew his plane out of the sky. But when you talk about the Marine landing, I actually thought you were talking initially about another one. So the one that you mentioned on the Crimean Peninsula was early in the morning of Ukrainian Independence Day, the 24th of August.
Yes.
And, you know, seeing that news on Independence Day was a big morale boost for everybody here. But yeah, the Ukrainian Marines went ashore. They had a particular target. It was a radar unit, and there were Russian forces who were stationed around it. 30 of them were killed. No Ukrainian casualties were taken. No losses of life were reported. I'm not sure about injuries. And the Ukrainians all exfiltrated afterwards and just told them, we can come and do this. But the other one that the one that I thought you were talking about actually was the Ukrainian cross river landing on the left bank of the Dnipro, where they've created, are in the process of creating a bridgehead at a place called the Kozachi Lagery, the Cossacks camp, and they've been in there and they haven't been dislodged already for about 3 weeks now, and they keep building up the forces there on the occupied bank of the Kherson Oblast too. So there's lots of fronts and lots of fields opening up.
Well, and that, the, what you brought up, the crossing that river, that's, you know, once again, there's a lot of signs here that this is going badly for Russia, and it's just a matter of time. But once again, it's the people, it's the military, it's those brave fighters, it's the people that are giving this pretty brilliant game plan, and it's the citizens that are doing this, and that's where all the credit goes. Let's take a quick break. We'll come on back. I want to talk a little bit about some of the other elements of what's going on, life in Ukraine as well. The thoughts on how the U.S. is responding, if it's enough for you guys, and then obviously we'll talk about Lifeline Ukraine. Paul Nyland's joining us, the founder of Lifeline Ukraine, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hey, it's Tom. Going solar is a great way to save on energy costs. By using the sun to power your house, you can feel good about an investment that will last for years. All Energy Solar is a locally trusted turnkey solar installer that's been around since 2009. They provide custom designs and quality installations of solar panel systems that work for your energy needs. One of the best parts about going solar is it's an investment that can pay for itself. Your system can pay back 100% of the installation cost in as little as 8 years. Plus, a system from All Energy Solar can pay back over 300% of its cost over its lifetime. There's also many tax incentives and rebates available, and the experts at All Energy Solar can walk you through the entire process to make sure you're saving as much as possible. So go green, both financially and environmentally, with All Energy Solar. Get a free, no-obligation assessment from All Energy Solar by calling 800-620-3370 or visiting allenergysolar.com.
Warner Stallion delivers appliance savings on a stick you won't find anywhere else. Earn a bonus for each additional appliance you buy for up to $1,000 back. Plus, pay no interest for 2 years. Shop smart with the specialists at Warner Stallion.
Hey, AM 950 listeners. My name is J.P. Derbogosian, and I'm the host of This Queer Book, Save My Life, the show that celebrates life-giving LGBTQ stories. Every week, I talk with new guests about the LGBTQ books that help us live and love with pride. On our next episode, I'm joined by Lena Matthews, host of the podcast Queer Lit, and we dish all about all things queer books. You can join us every Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 94, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Paul Nyland joining us this hour talking about the war in Ukraine, stopping the evil forces of the Russians, and, of course, trying to help out the Ukrainian people with Lifeline Ukraine. Paul, I did bring up briefly there Belarus and Hungary. These are two countries. I mean, Hungary is basic. Orban is basically just saying, if you touch the infrastructure of our gas lines that come into our country, we're going to get involved. That's going to be hilarious to watch. But the Belarusians as well, they of course, obviously, and I'll call it, they're stooges of Putin. What is the Ukrainian thought on those two countries and their stances right now? Because obviously they're border countries and that is an obvious threat.
Belarus has been essentially taken over by the Putin regime because they had a presidential election in August of 2021, which was thoroughly rigged. And then the good people of Belarus finally stood up. They took to the streets, hundreds of thousands of them. They were remarkable scenes. I know many Belarusians and I've followed the situation there very, very closely for a long time. I've been invited, in actual fact, in the very early days of this phase of the war, I was contacted by one of my very good Belarusian contacts who said, my parents said that if you need a safe place to go, you can go to Minsk. my response was exactly what it is right now. You know, I just laughed. Like, Minsk would not be a safe place for me to be at all. But what happened was Putin projected his anti-revolution technology onto Belarus and succeeded to a degree, though the Belarusian opposition, or actually government in exile, really is what they should be. The Belarusian opposition still exists, and they have a very strong voice, and the groundswell of support for them remains a vast majority of the people of Belarus. But since then, since Putin saved Lukashenko's bacon, Lukashenko is completely indebted to him. He has no sovereign control. He has no say. He has no authority. He's only a puppet of Putin, and that is why Russia was allowed to invade the north of Ukraine and come to attack Kiev from Belarus, because Lukashenko had no choice. Orban and Hungary are a different matter entirely. you know, that's a country that is a member of the EU and of NATO. And both organizations should really be very, very wary of how they are being undermined from within because of what Orban is doing and because of how Orban is also very much not just ideologically aligned with Putin, but very much indebted to Putin as well. But it's interesting that you bring that up because Orban just did a sit-down interview with Tucker Carlson a few days ago, and I watched as far as the first question, and Tucker says, people in America say that the Ukrainians are winning the war. What are your thoughts about that? And Orban says, it's a lie. It's not even a misunderstanding. It's a complete lie because Russia cannot lose because Russia has so much more manpower. And again, it goes back to what I said to you there in you know, the first segment before the break, right? You can mobilize another 200, 400,000 people. You can mobilize a million people. That doesn't make them trained soldiers. And so what the argument, and that was the only question of the interview that I watched because I can't stand to watch Tucker Carlson or to listen to Viktor Orban, but the argument that Russia has to win because Russia has more people is simplistic, naive, and plain stupid. If you can't train the people because your officers have been killed, if you have no experienced military because they've all been killed to lead those new recruits, if you cannot equip them, and you mentioned earlier on, Matt, saying that you know you hear reports of Russians being sent to the front lines that don't even have weapons in some cases. I'm seeing more and more reports. It's hot here in Ukraine at the moment. It's been 34, 35 degrees over the last few days consecutively. It's hot here, and they don't even have water in the trenches. If you can't get water to your frontline troops, your logistics are a big, big mess. So, you know, there are roles that are being played by Belarus as a staging post, by Hungary as a promulgator of Russian propaganda, but neither of them are going to make any difference in the outcome of this war. The outcome of this war is Ukraine wins, Russia will be defeated. Ukraine is 63,000 square kilometers of territory, and that will all be restored and put back under Ukrainian government control. That's the end of the war. Oh, and justice, obviously.
Yeah.
Putin and the others who are war criminals to The Hague for trial.
And by the way, you're good to call me out. There are a lot of great Belarusians who are not basically part of this, as well as there are people in Hungary. I mean, Orban is not liked in this country as well. And so, you know, but I can't wait for them to say, hey, we were always on your side after you win. That'll be hilarious. Now, that being said, it is a mixed bag. You do see the United States, I see, is very much on your side. I've actually have no problem. I don't think, you know, sending over F-16s. I think that, that's what you do with allies. And we consider you an ally, the country an ally over there. There have been some people, obviously, Ukraine would love as much help as they can get. Some people have been critical, saying that they can't do enough, as well as also they've been critical of people, like you mentioned, Tucker Carlson, some of the paid-off organizations and politicians that are there just to basically be Russian sounding boards. You know, how are the people of Ukraine feeling about the United States? Are they feeling like we're still good allies, or is there just frustration with the lack of more advanced technology and the fact that you do have these clown cars that are running around this country on the side of Russia?
So, I mean, you know, if again, just to briefly touch on Tucker Carlson, Tucker Carlson was declaring 2 months ago that the counteroffensive had, past tense, failed. Right. Mm-hmm. So that puts in context where his knowledge of this conflict is. And again, he's applying the positions that he is for personal gain and for personal benefit rather than anything else. Our feelings towards the United States of America, and I mean, I say our because I've been here for 20 years. I consider myself to be Ukrainian. Our feelings towards our allies in the United States, bipartisan, is we are exceptionally grateful for everything that has been sent. There are There are some false narratives, again, played by people like Donald Trump, and Donald Trump says Europe should pick up the budget more because it's closer, et cetera, et cetera. The level of aid that has been provided, military aid provided by European Union member states and the United States of America, are almost on a par, right? They're, I mean, literally, they're, you know, within half a billion dollars of each other, right? So setting aside the nonsense arguments and the falsehoods, but when I said bipartisan, Mitt Romney a few days ago once again made the point of the value that Americans are actually getting from their investment here.
Yes.
What support for Ukraine is costing you is 3% of your annual budget, your annual defense budget, 3% of it. And for that, 50% so far of your biggest adversary's military capability capacity has been eradicated. That, as Mitt Romney said the other day, and many have been saying for months, that is a bargain. Lindsey Graham was here recently as well. He's made exactly the same point. He's exactly right. You know, if I was trying to be completely nonpartisan in this, I've just complimented a couple of Republicans. There's a criticism that there are some within the Biden administration who are too timid, who are erring on the side of caution because they fear an escalation. Well, I'm sorry, but Russia's got nothing left to escalate with.
Yeah.
Other than rhetoric. You know, one of their propagandists, Solovyov, was yesterday talking about destroying the Baltic countries. You know, well, they're NATO members. You can't. You can't and won't get anywhere near them. And if they did that, if Russia were to attack a NATO country, they would be, I said on social media, within days, they would be completely obliterated. Somebody came back to me and quoted actually a general saying, no, this person says it would probably take up to about 2 weeks, right? But that's a fair estimation. But yeah, the timidity from some in the Biden administration, and if we're going to name names, Jake Sullivan is the name that seems to come up most in what I read, as he is the most cautious one. We need longer range strikes. Mm-hmm. We needed to have planes much, much faster. One of the first articles that I wrote in this phase of the war, and we use that wording because the war has been ongoing. Russia's aggression against Ukraine has been ongoing with a hot war in the Donbass since 2014. But one of the first articles that I wrote, I actually asked the editor not to change the title at all. And the title was, "We're here at the invitation of the legitimate government," right? Because every time Russia was accused of, rightly accused, of committing war crimes in Syria, that was their only answer. They said, "We are here at the invitation of the legitimate government." And I quoted in this article the chapter 51 of the United Nations Charter, which talks about the right of every nation for self-defense and the right of any other nation to contribute to that. And so my article, probably 2 months into this war, was give us airplanes, give us the means to control the skies and to claim air superiority. Ukraine did not have an air force, but could have been supplied with one. And I'm talking about with old Soviet stock as well, like, you know, stuff that is sitting in neighboring Central European states that, you know, they've been operating in their air forces for decades. We could have got that. It didn't happen. We should have had the F-16s agreed much earlier. It didn't happen. We still have not seen the Abrams tanks here. I know that they're complicated pieces of equipment. I know that they're essentially a jet engine with tons of steel and a big gun on the top of it. You know, I get all the logistical issues, but you know what? Don't present to me this is a problem and so no. You present to me this is a problem and this is the solution. Mm-hmm. Because from our perspective, delays and not just in US Abrams tank, but the Leopard tanks that are produced in Europe as well, delays in providing Ukraine the material that it needs to hasten the victory means more lost lives. So that's our position. And I tried to answer your question in as balanced a way as possible, talking about Republicans, Democrats, the United States, and Europe. You know, it's not a pointed criticism at the U.S. specifically, or any particular element or particular political side in the U.S. It's to you all. It's to you all. And let's talk about Australia as well. Let's talk about Australia. They've got these brilliant, brilliant vehicles called Bushmasters, right? They've sent us about, I think, 4 dozen of them, right? Well, they're great. They've proven their worth. They are saving lives. They're heavily, heavily armored and heavily protected, and they move very, very fast through Ukrainian terrain. Send another 250 of them now. Mm-hmm.
I want to, you know, a few things here. I want to make sure I review for everyone out who's listening. First of all, there are there are a lot of Democrats. The vast majority of Democrats are 100% on board with Ukraine. I am personally on, but the Russians don't have anything that can compete with the F-16. The F-16 changes the dynamic so much. The Russians don't have anything that can hit it. And so it's putting a finger on the scale. But as you said, we're investing a small bit here. We are literally watching the Ukrainians dismantle the Russian military force with us. That is a value that we will never be able to repay. We need to be sending you thank you cards for the next 5,000 years because of what you've been able to do to the Russia. So I think it is. And by the way, if you want to be bipartisan, Nikki Haley absolutely smacking down Ramaswamy at the debate saying, no, this is our ally. We help Ukraine. And I think that's one thing that is endearing, at least for me, is I hear the vast majority of voices in this country saying, help Ukraine any way we can. That's the important thing. If I can, I want to switch a little bit here at the end here. I want to talk a little bit about when you and I talked before we started recording, you said I'm exhausted. And I have to imagine that is the mentality. This has been, a year and a half, a little more than a year and a half, I believe, at this point. And this has been, it's ongoing. The strains on the Ukrainian people, talk a little bit about that and how the day-to-day life is going there. Obviously, we talked about the threats of still Russian attacks, but how are the Russian people, the Ukrainian people dealing with the day-to-day element of this, war going on?
I saw a photograph of some cretin standing in a square in the Netherlands the day before yesterday, and he's holding a sign saying we're tired of this war, right? Mm-hmm. There's nobody who is more tired of this war than the people of Ukraine, and it is ever present, Matt, and ever present is, for example, our fears of the text message that might come in 20 seconds saying that I've lost a loved one, right? Mm-hmm. That is a minute to minute reality. It's something that never leaves you. At the same time, we have no other choice. We have no other country. We've got nowhere to go to, right? People say, like, give Putin an off-ramp. Putin's got 11 time zones of off-ramps. Yeah. Get your troops back across your border. You've got all the space that you need there. You don't need any more territory, and you're not having any of ours, right? This is Ukraine. This is Ukrainian land. Ukrainian people live here. All of it will be liberated so that the Ukrainian people can live a democratic future in peace. That is what is going to happen. And so it doesn't, yes, we are exhausted. Yes, there is the constant psychological stress. There are the things that we have been subjected to, some of us, and witnessed all of us and experienced all of us, that drain, that chip away, that add to the lines around your eyes and the wrinkles on your forehead, whatever, there is no choice. Ukraine will win. Ukraine has to win. Ukraine will liberate all of its territory. The people of Crimea have been suffering under Russian occupation and the militarization of their peninsula, and now there are recruitment or conscription centers being opened up in Crimea to recruit tens of thousands of Crimean residents to go and fight against their own country, which in itself is a war crime. An occupational authority cannot conscript the local population of an area that it controls, however temporarily or however permanently, and it is only temporary. But, you know, the Crimean Tatars, who are the indigenous population of that peninsula, have seen nothing but persecution now for 9.5 years. You know, being locked up for having their own language, culture, and identity, and objecting to their homeland being taken over by the Russian invaders. Yeah, it's exhausting. It's exhausting, but we have no choice. Mm-hmm. We have no choice. There's a book actually by an American journalist. He's the FT correspondent, Chris Miller, and he titled his book "The War Came to Us," and that's the reality, right? The war came to us, but we will finish it, mm-hmm. and we will finish it where it started. It started first of all on the 27th of February of 2014. The revolution of dignity finished on the 22nd of February when Yanukovych fled to Russia, right? And for 5 days, it was like, what did we just go through? Again, the exhaustion after 93 days of participating in a revolution and being on Maidan when it was on fire, when people were being killed, when there were all kinds of attempts to bring an end to that rightful movement. We were exhausted on the 22nd of February, but Yanukovych was gone, and so we were euphoric at the same time. And then the 27th of February, 5 days later, the Russian military operation to seize Crimea began in earnest. It had been planned years before anyway, but it began in earnest with their special forces soldiers taking over the Crimean Parliament building and forcing the members of Parliament to call some kind of referendum that the Russians then staged. It began in Crimea. It will end in Crimea. And once Crimea is liberated and the Russians that have been moved in to assimilate and change the demographic of the local population, once they've been kicked out, then the Kerch Bridge can be dropped and that blight on the map will be eradicated as well, and that will be the final point other than justice in The Hague.
Lifeline Ukraine is offering mental health services, suicide prevention for Ukrainian troops, their family members, basically anyone that calls. Your call levels, I imagine, are still at peak levels as they've been the last time we talked, right, Paul?
We began Lifeline Ukraine, Matt, as a support service for troops and their family members. We evolved a long time ago to being simply the national suicide prevention hotline for anybody who needs us. We're very proud of our roots, that our beginning, we were inspired to come together and create what we did because we wanted to help the military. But now we help anybody. And when we last spoke, I might have touched on the kinds of additional trainings, the additional expertise and knowledge that we've taken on board to help with certain specifics related to what the Russians have been doing in this phase of the war. We took on training, for example, to know how to support victims of sexual violence. And today I read an article saying that there are now 93,000 reported cases of sexual violence at the hands of the Russian occupiers. Each one of them is an absolute nightmare being lived for each of those victims. And we took on training to help people who are displaced by war, and that's a situation that affects millions and millions of Ukrainians. There's about 11 million Ukrainians that are displaced, 7 inside the country and 4 million who are refugees. We used to have, before the 24th of February last year, we used to average 1,000 instances of support per month that we were providing. In April and May of this year, in the spring of this year, it was close to 6,000, a six-fold increase in the demand for support for Lifeline Ukraine. So you know, I'm proud of what my colleagues have achieved and what they continue to do, and it's professionally, it's the most wonderful and impactful thing that I've ever done with my life, and that we are called on to such a degree now as a result of this war. I'm grateful every day that we did what we did, that I was invited to create this and create it. I did. And it stands there today to support every person in Ukraine who is experiencing some kind of emotional crisis or psychological trauma. And we will continue to be here forever to continue to support those people.
LifelineUkraine.com. If you go to the language bar, you can pull up the English site, and there's a big old donate button there, folks. I want everyone to go out there and click on it and make a donation. Help them out. And it's one little thing you can do here, as we also lobby all of our politicians to make sure that we're getting, let's send the F-16s over there as well. Keep kicking their ass. Just keep kicking their ass. It is a beautiful thing to watch. And as I said to you before we got on the air, it's enjoyable watching Russia lose their entire military. By the time this is all over, they're going to bring back all the stuff they used for the last Crimean War in the 1850s, because that's literally all they're going to have is horses and carts, because you guys have absolutely been brilliant in your fight to preserve your country. So God bless you all. I think you're doing a wonderful job.
Matt, I thank you once again for having this opportunity to speak to you and to your audience, and let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely. You can come back anytime. Paul Nyland, Lifeline Ukraine. We'll take a break, come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Seward Co-op is now offering convenient self-serve and prepackaged hot options and salad bars at both the Franklin and Friendship stores. Breakfast items available daily until 11 a.m. and brunch served all day every Sunday. Their weekly lunch and dinner menus highlight cuisines from around the world. They offer vegan, vegetarian, and gluten-free options daily. 95% of the ingredients used are organic from small-scale, local community food producers whenever possible. More at seward.coop.
You hear a lot about Rudy Luther Toyota's hybrid cars, but maybe you're asking yourself, are they worth it? Let me say from experience, absolutely. I have a Toyota Sienna hybrid, and the proof is in the gas tank. Before my hybrid, I was filling up my tank once a week. Now it's consistently every 2 weeks. I did the math, and my hybrid is saving me over $1,000 every year. And the Toyota hybrids are some of the most stylish and comfortable vehicles you'll ever drive. Now's the time to get a Toyota hybrid. Set up a time to test drive one today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Paul Nyland from Lifeline Ukraine. Help out if you can. I will say John Fugelsang actually has a post out there, which is pretty much spot on point. If you're one of these right-wingers that's against helping Ukraine, I want to put it in this perspective for you. If someone invaded your house, raped your wife, murdered your child, how many rooms of your house would you give them so they'd start being nicer to you? Of course, the answer is zero. Basically, start blaming Putin for what he's doing over there to Ukraine. It is ungodly and unforgivable. And help out Ukraine. God bless them all over there, because they're doing the best they can for sure. Hour two up next.
Outfront Minnesota is the state's largest LGBTQ+ advocacy organization, and they're celebrating our state's accomplishments protecting our LGBTQ+ neighbors. This is especially important as surrounding states are passing legislation targeting our trans community. But here in Minnesota, we made it clear, You belong here. Minnesota's LGBTQ plus rights have taken a significant step forward with the conversion therapy ban and the trans refuge bill, helping reshape the national discourse. The trailblazers who once championed same-sex marriage a decade ago continue propelling Minnesota towards an even brighter future. To celebrate these accomplishments, Outfront Minnesota is hosting their annual gala, where we bring in together more than 700 guests at Allianz Field on Thursday, September 14th. The event celebrates a year of legislative wins while honoring diverse communities propelling Minnesota forward into next year. Again, that's Thursday.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. I'm